The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I am your host, JP John Paz, and with me today is the current and two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion, former GHC Tag Team Champion, former IWGP Tag Team Champion, and of course, former TNA World Heavyweight Champion, Mr. Nick Aldis. Nick, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm good, John. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. Obviously, you know, your name is all over the place, and you're all over the place. So what's been going on with you lately?
I didn't know. I feel like my name's been less all over the place than it's been in quite a while. But
I don't know. I feel like because I follow Fight TV a lot, so I always see you popping up doing interviews and stuff. So maybe it's just me.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. No, that's been great working with Fight. Being able to. Expand my horizons a little bit as a broadcaster. You know, getting to talk to some names in the world of boxing and MMA, and even a couple of pro wrestling interviews. Although, you know, we're kind of judicious about what I do as far as sort of promoting wrestling. But I did talk to Goji Iwazaki, you know, ahead of a Noah pay per view and stuff like that. But I'm a big boxing fan and big, you know, I like the fight game. So it's been fun for me to be able to dip my toe in that water and keep, getting more experience under my belt as a broadcaster. It was really cool to be involved in a small way in the Mike Tyson, Roy Jones fight. You know, I did a round table for that with some luminaries from the world of boxing. And so that was cool. And outside of that, running my business, Legacy Sports Nutrition, which we started at the end of last year. We launched at the end of November, and that's been going great. We actually had our best week of sales last week, so appreciate everyone who's checking that out at legacysups.com. And then still very much involved with the NWA, even though, you know, the NWA obviously had somewhat of a subdued 2020.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I've just been seeing you because of Fight TV and stuff, but you're definitely still out there. But wrestling-wise, with NWA-wise, it's been very, very quiet. You've only really had a few matches in the last, I'd say, year or so. So what's been going on with the NWA? Are they still alive and well, and what's the latest?
Oh, yeah, I'm very much operational. You know, basically, when with COVID happening and the toll that it took on live events, that really made a significant dent in the business model for the company, because despite the fact that we did a studio show in Atlanta, those tickets would sell out very fast, and we were on the cusp of entering into a new live event agreement with a live events company, which would have been a real significant line item for the company. So obviously that went away. And so really, you know, because of the way that we had, the way that the company had approached the model, it was very much sort of a modern interpretation almost of the old territories, which was the TVs, for lack of a better word, you know, the show, NWA Power, the studio show, was very much a vehicle to promote the other revenue streams, being live events and pay-per-view. Now, obviously, pay-per-view was our number one revenue stream, and we did very well with that. One of the reasons why we have such a good relationship with Fight, because we were top performer for them on pay-per-view. But you know, live events suddenly, you know, that's off the table, and it was, look. I feel like this conversation, we've done it to death. You know, it's like, yeah, we got screwed by the circumstances, but more so than I would say any other company, just based on where we were at in our, you know, at that point in time. We were, you know, the company had had some, you know, we had some incredible momentum, and because of that growth, we were able to sign more talent to exclusive contracts and start to expand the talent roster as far as exclusive talent. Not that it was ever going to be, it was never, you know, having a full-time talent roster was never going to be part of the NWA model. That's just a sort of, that's just an assumption I think that people have about all wrestling companies now, is that, you know, a talent signs and that's it, and they work there forever and ever and ever, and then when they leave, it's all big headline news, the talent left. Like, you know, the intention was always to have staple kind of guys, you know, a sort of a main cast, if you will, and then have, you know, rotating guest stars. And that's still the approach. Obviously, it just meant that, you know, at the time, you know, things had to reshuffle a bit based on the circumstances, because there were guys who were going to have opportunities elsewhere that, you know, that certainly a pandemic shouldn't prevent them from exploring, you know. And so, you know, and I think at the time, you know, really the major line item as far as talent is me, and I'm not going anywhere. But, you know, for a lot of the other guys, it was kind of like they weren't in the position that I was in, you know, financially. So it was, so they, you know, so a lot of them, and they were on short-term deals. So, that, you know, so that when opportunities popped up elsewhere, they took them, and there was no hard feelings, and that's that. And I feel like it sort of, a lot of that got kind of, you know, misrepresented by, you know, wrestling media, because they love to, you know, it's almost like a genre in itself now, sort of wrestling media. It's like that sort of, more people are more interested in that than they are the actual shows now, you know. So I think like things got misinterpreted, and obviously there are a lot of wrestlers who love to, you know, air their dirty laundry on Twitter and, or, you know, or interviews and whatnot. And it was like, so I feel like it created this sort of this atmosphere, I think, around the company that you know, that was really not accurate, really wasn't representative of what was going on. And to be honest with you, Billy, you know, he took a lot of it to heart. Like he felt, you know, and I can understand that, because he, out of everyone involved in this industry, you know, on a serious, significant level, you know, no one's put more of their own money, you know, into something than he has. You know, we're talking millions, you know, and it's like he didn't get into this under, you know, with under any illusion that he was going to be great at it right off the bat, and it was going to all be, you know, and it was all going to be, you know, sunshine and rainbows. He wants to make money at it, but obviously he's got into this business because it's a passion, you know, because he has a huge passion for it, you know. So it's like, it's tough, and a lot of our conversations have revolved around the, you know, around that advice from me to, hey, you can't take it, stop taking it so personally, you know. And I think he, you know, I think he gets it. I think he understands that. And it's just interesting to see how our, you know, we have an interesting relationship because, you know, look, I'm forever indebted to the guy. Like he's done so much for me and my family. And you know, the thing I love about working with Billy is the fact that, like I just said, I work with him, you know, like, yeah, like I'll, when I talk to friends of mine or my brother, who's a huge Pumpkins fan and stuff like that, like, oh yeah, it's funny. He's my boss, you know, he is the boss. He is the final say on everything. But he very much sees it, and you know, as working with, and so do I, you know, and that's and you know, so are the other people involved in the organization. You know, Pat Kenny's come on, and he had been working as a producer at the last set of tapings for Power anyway, and now he's taken on a larger role, in, you know, administratively. And that's great. Like he is that I'm super excited about the dynamic of Billy and Pat as the faces of the administration for the company, because Pat really, really understands and has a huge passion for what it is we're trying to achieve. You know, Pat saw what we were doing, and he was so into it, so excited about it. And, you know, and so for him to now, you know, come on board, you know that he's doing it for the right reasons. He didn't think, oh, hey, this guy Billy Corgan's got some money, you know, I'll go and share, you know, like a lot of wrestlers do. Mm-hmm. That's not the way it went with Pat at all. Pat saw what we were doing and was like, oh, finally something that I actually like and something that I totally can get on board with and, you know, want to help grow. And he's been fantastic. And, I can't wait to tackle 2021 head on with Pat Kenny.
So what's next up? Is it hard to say because of COVID and the pandemic, or do we know what's next up for the NWA?
I know what's next. I know what's next. I'm not at liberty to say just yet. But it's, I know that's just, you know, such a typical wrestling cliche thing. And that's why I kind of, you know, I don't go into these interviews expecting not to be asked,
right?
But I don't try to tease it too much and say, oh, big things coming, brother. You know, as, you know, ultimately, we've had some very, very good, very, very positive news in the last few weeks. Hopefully here very, very shortly, we should be able to share some of that with everyone about moving forward. But yeah, NWA Power will return.
And the United Wrestling Network, you wrestled for them, obviously, you know, their first show, you wrestled Mike Bennett. Like, obviously, they stopped running shows, so obviously the NWA is not going to run shows. But is that relationship going to be there going forward?
I think to a point. I mean, the relationship with them has, you know, has always been there. It's been there really since the beginning of the Lightning One era. You know, we utilized Championship Wrestling from Hollywood to help, you know, further some of our stuff and utilize some of the talent and help, you know, create a bit of a change of scenery. And look, I will forever, for me, you know, I have a real affection for going out to LA and driving down the PCH and going to the Ocean View Pavilion now. You know, it's first of all, it's a really cool place to go to work, you know, considering a lot of places. I mean, look, I was fortunate to get to go to Universal Studios in Orlando for 6 years to go mm-hmm. as a place to go to work. But, you know, there's very, very few places I've been to work, you know, as where you can, you know, literally go across the street and you're on, you know, a picturesque California beach. So, and you know, we've encountered, we've met some really young, hungry talent as a result of, you know, being involved with that group. Most notably, Billy Trask, who is now taking on more responsibility with the NWA as well, and going to be, you know, work very, very heavily involved with in the production side of things. And he's, you know, Billy Trask, you talk about a guy who's, I think he, that's a name that you're going to hear in this business for a long time. Because, you know, there are certain people that you hear about, you know, Kevin Dunn or you know, Keith Mitchell or people like that, who, because they, you know, they are so good at what they do from a television production standpoint and they understand the business. It's not hard. It's not that easy to find guys who have that level of passion and that level of ability, you know, in that combination. I think Billy Trask has the potential to be somebody, you know, in that realm for many years to come. And the most exciting thing about it is he's young. You know, he's my age, you know, he's in his 30s. So it's like, he's totally, he's like me. He's totally engaged with the idea of being involved with this thing for the long haul, you know, and sort of planting his flag in the ground with the NWA.
Now, when I interviewed Mike Bennett a few months back, he was saying the match got cut short a bit, kind of frustrated him. He said it was still good.
More than a bit.
So what happened there? He kind of didn't go too much into it, but he said it was a lot shorter than you guys had planned on it going.
Well, look, it was a production snafu from on their end. It was, look, and I don't want to throw anyone under the bus in particular, but it was the first, it was a maiden voyage of a live broadcast, and you're always going to have a few teething problems. A lot of the talent on that show were not particularly experienced when it came to live television. A lot of them had done a lot of taped television, but not a ton of live broadcasts. And I think just a combination of the excitement of wanting to have a good showing for all of these. There's a lot of young guys on that show who wanted to have a good showing, you know, and a production crew who were, you know, dealing with new facility and a new broadcast and new equipment, things just got away from them. And it was just a lack of experience, because really what needed to happen was one of the matches needed to be cut, you know, and had there been somebody there with more experience, they would have been able to see that, you know, coming down the pipe and go, okay, this is going to have a domino effect. And, you know, one of the other matches needs to be cut. And that's not me speaking from an ego standpoint. As is business, like the you know, most of the people buying that show on that particular night were buying it to see Mike and I. And so you know, that has to take precedent. But having said that, I felt like we worked incredibly hard and delivered a satisfactory, you know, performance given the time restraints. And man, what a pro Mike Bennett is. You know, I take a lot of pride, professional pride, in really that whole sort of package, that whole presentation, the 10 pounds of gold going into it, which, you know, it's no secret that, you know, with Dave Lagana, you know, departing the company, we had a big gaping hole in the sort of, in the editing and directing, department. And I really, when it came to Mike Bennett and putting that whole thing together, I really had the whole vision in my head of how it could go. And I was the one who went to Billy and really went to bat hard and said, look, I think there's a really interesting story to tell here. And I think we can really, like, connect with people on an emotional level. And I think we can really create something, like, really tell an interesting story, with Mike Bennett in this current, you know, in his current situation. And Billy basically said, okay, well, you do it then. you know. And so I did. So, you know, so I, that was my first, that episode of 10 Pounds was the first one that I directed and put together. And I was very pleased with it, you know, and it just to see the response to it and how it came out and the level of interest, you know, and, you know, Fight were ecstatic about how well it performed and the interest in that show and everything like that. So, and just from a, I just think from a personal pride standpoint to be able to have that sort of to see where Mike is now, you know, and really helping him sort of regain that confidence to sort of position himself as like someone who you can be more than just a guy who if things didn't work out at WWE for you. You know, because things don't work out for a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. And it's like, you can either choose to let that be, you know, define you forever, or you can, you know, or you can rewrite your story, you know, and tell a new story. And I've take a lot of pride in the fact that I was able to help him, you know, to do that and to see him flourishing now at Ring of Honor. And, you know, that's great.
He seems like a happy guy, much more happy than he was in WWE. That's for sure.
Yeah, look, I knew Mike a little bit. We had wrestled once on the independents years ago before he went to WWE. It was after I had left TNA and before he went to WWE and before he went to TNA even. You know, we had good chemistry then. You know, I worked with him and Taven in a tag when those guys were teaming. And obviously, we've had a lot of business with Ring of Honor, you know. So I've had a great time working with Ring of Honor over the last couple of years as well, you know. So it's like seeing him, you know, help contribute to them is good. It, you know, makes me feel good too because I like those guys, you know. So it's like we don't have any the NWA. We don't have any. Like beefs with anyone, you know, like we don't have any sort of rivalries or kind of, you know, turf war sort of situations going on with any other promotions.
Yeah. I mean, you have wrestled for Ring of Honor, defended the world title there, the Marty Scurll feud. I mean, obviously, you know, you had a lot of stuff going on. UWN, United Wrestling Network, AEW, you haven't been there yet, but Thunder Rosa has been there. Serena Deeb has been there. Is there any kind of talk or any sort of momentum with you defending the NWA world title in AEW? I mean, you've beaten Cody before, you know, and he's beaten you, but you beat him before. So any kind of interest in AEW, any talks there?
Not recently. I mean, I wouldn't rule anything out, but it's not something that I'm scrambling to try to make happen. Cody pretty much said he doesn't want it to happen. So, you know, and I said, okay, you know, that's okay. Good for you. And, we have to focus on, I made the decision to stay put with the NWA because I wanted to use the value that I felt like I had built up to benefit this brand, you know, and to just go ahead and just sort of give it away to another thing, just for the sort of short term kind of social media buzz or the kind of, oh my God, this is awesome, like dream match, yada, yada. Like that's, you know, I'm not thinking short term, you know, I'm thinking long term. I do appreciate the many, many, many fans that will never let it die and, you know, continuously bring it up and, you know, well, when are we going to see it? And it's just like, there's a difference between giving the people what they want and just giving it away. Right. Like, you know, I personally, and look, Cody, you know, it seemingly might have a different take on this, but I personally thought that our whole business with Cody, with, you know, around the NWA title was very, very mutually beneficial for both guys. I felt like it was one of those rare cases where everybody came out a bit better. You know, he got an incredible moment. You know, I got, you know, a bigger platform. The NWA got to strut their stuff on a big stage. You know, we got to show how, that we're the best at telling the real emotional investment stories and delivering the big matches with the big fight feel. And everybody came out of it more valuable, you know, and to me, it's like, let's just leave it at that then.
I feel like at All In, you know, you had Omega and the Bucks and all the other guys, you and Cody stole the show to me, best match at All In. And then at 70th anniversary show, another great match. So to me, it's one of those things where you almost want to see that third match kind of thing. Yeah, just as being a fan, but such great chemistry. You guys work well together.
Look, and that's what I mean. It's like, it's there, you know, but again, it has to be right. Business wise, like to do it right now would be, you know, to me would be figuratively, you know, shooting your wad, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, apologies for the distasteful analogy, but it's like, that's what it would be, right? It, you know, at this point it would be like, we can't have fans and, you know, it's not, there's no way for it to really be mutually beneficial right now. I feel like they would benefit a lot from it, but that would be about it.
As far as you, I talk to Kevin Sullivan, do a show with him every week. He always says the best wrestlers take a little bit here and there from each guy, and they kind of put it together, and they make their own self. But it's, you know, maybe like Triple H, for instance, would take a little bit from Flair, a little bit from Arn, a little bit from Harley, and kind of put it all together. With you, I kind of see a little bit of Nick Bockwinkel. You know, you see a little bit of that old school. I mean, he's more AWA, but you see old school NWA with you, but you see a little bit of Nick Bockwinkel, the way you dress, the way you carry yourself, the way you hold the belt, you know, certain things. What would you say, like, if you were to pick a couple guys and say that that's who I would kind of want to be or emulate?
Well, first of all, I completely agree with that. I think that from the guys I've borrowed from the most are Harley, Flair, Triple H, which is, you know, so you know, saying that he took from those guys, and you know, I took from him and from them. Bockwinkel, like you said, Scott Hall, you know, Steve Austin, you know, Rock, like I you know, Bret Hart. For me, I think if from in-ring wise, I'd probably say that I probably took the most from Flair, Bret, and Harley, and then with other areas, sort of, you know, like the kind of seasoning and the showmanship and the razzmatazz and the details and stuff, I borrowed a little bit from Rock, a little bit from Scott Hall, you know, Bockwinkel, even Bobby Heenan, and you know, even Finley, like this. But Brett's probably my most strongest influence as far like in terms of my default thinking, you know, because I've tried to make it where, for me anyway, I want the number one sort of characteristic of myself to be believable storytelling, you know, and then everything else sort of comes, you know, everything else comes next, because to me, I feel that's the, again, I'm not sure how many people in my generation share this sentiment, but I believe that's the underlying premise of viable professional wrestling, is that regardless of what you do and the spots and the, you know, and the moves and the stories, overall, there's got to be an element of believability. There has to, it's suspension of disbelief, right? Not suspension of belief,
right?
You know, it's not like, oh, we know we're supposed to believe it, but you know, we know it's not, it should be the other way around. It's suspension of disbelief. Like, okay, I know that it's not really real, but God, this feels real. you know.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I feel like with you and Tim Storm, that felt real just because of the promos. It was almost like Flair Dusty back in the day where you felt it was real. Like, oh, this, you know, this rich guy is telling this working man guy, you know, that, you know, this and that. And they're going back and forth. And he's the working man guy is telling the rich guy how it is. It kind of felt like that with you and Storm. And I talked to Tim Storm about this. You guys were the best promos in the business at that point.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, look, because I think because we don't do promos, we do interviews.
Right, right. Good point.
Right? Like it's, yep. It's, well, first of all, you know, look, and again, this is not a shot at WWE or anyone else, right. But we're not scripted. It's not, there isn't someone, you know, the story isn't playing out based on how someone else sees it. It's playing out based on how I see it. Like, and I'm basing it, and it's playing out, and I see it based on what's real. Like that's how we got the whole thing over with Tim in the first place was with the 10 pounds of gold series. It's like, hey, yeah, most of you haven't heard of Tim Storm because he's not very well known. He's a school teacher actually, but hey, if you sit down with him for 10 minutes and listen to him speak, you realize that this guy's. You know, he's authentic and he's rugged and he's believable and goddamn, he's likable, you know? And then you have this other guy and it's like, yeah, we've seen him around, you know, but he's been up and he's been down and he's in the middle and, you know, he had a big push and he's, you know, he was a young prodigy and now he's like hitting his peak and you're not really sure what he's going to do. Those things are interesting and they're already interesting enough. You know, we don't need to create all this other stuff around it. It's like, there's the contrast right there. Like I've been full-time in the wrestling business, my entire adult life, you know, Tim, all he ever really wanted was to, you know, be able to make a living as a wrestler, but he always had to be, but it had to be a side hustle for him. So there's the contrast. I'm not saying I'm a millionaire, you know, and it's like, we're trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I make a nice living from wrestling, but it's, you know, but I'm not Conor McGregor, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like, that's the difference between suspension of disbelief and bullshit, you know, and just lazy, like fantastical kind of nonsense, you know, like that's to me is what the element, and especially the NWA, that's what the NWA is supposed to be. It's that like, well, I know some of that other stuff is a little bit, may not be on the up and up, but I tell you what, that Magnum TA, he'd whip your ass, you know, like, or that, you know, or let me tell you something, that, you know, that Tully Blanchard, you know, or whoever, right? Like that, you know, Ronnie Garvin or, you know, all these guys that was like the whole deal was kind of like, yeah, they're a bit flashy and they're a bit, you know, but they ain't silly. They ain't silly. They're real men. You know, this is athletic.
And when you guys are at that podium doing your interviews, your promos, so to speak, it's sink or swim up there. I mean, it's the focus is on you. And I feel like the NWA did that perfectly because you're going to see if the guy can do it or he can't do it. It's 100%. Up to the guy. And you and Storm were like hitting it out of the park. Literally, you would do the home run.
right. Well, look, you know, that was pretty much how it was laid out to everyone on that first season was like, they told everyone the podium is the most important place here. The ring is second. Like you can have your match. Like that's all well and good, but you can see from the show, the people that get brought up the most from NWA Power, myself, Tim Storm, Eli Drake, you know, and then Thunder Rosa, Aaron Stevens, you know, a lot of guys had a really good showing there. But when you go through it, with the exception maybe of Thunder Rosa, because Rosa was brought in with a slightly different approach in that she was sort of brought in with a bit more mystery and mystique and, you know, and video packages and stuff. But everyone else, the first place you saw him was the podium. Mm-hmm. Not the ring, right? And there were a lot of guys, you know, who were booked on the show who didn't get any interview time, and they're not that well remembered. Like, they're just guys who were there, and some are very, very talented. And that's, and so again, it kind of goes back to that more old fashioned sort of approach, which is like, well, the guys who can talk are the guys who are going to get the focal point. And that's what we wanted. Again, not because we believe that that's the best way to do it and everyone else is stupid. Like, it's just that in and of itself in the current, in the modern era is different. Like, because most other places have a different approach to that. Like, for most sure. guys are most guys, most companies now are banking on the idea of guys getting over in the ring. And we have a different approach. We think guys will get over, you know, at the podium.
And I love that it's not scripted. And I think that's how Eddie Kingston, I mean, he's a long time indie guy, but I think that's how he got noticed. And I think that's how Ricky Starks 100%. Got noticed as well.
If AEW or anyone else want to kid themselves and want to pretend that it was from anything else, then that's up to them. Like, if they want to pretend that they found some other way, then whatever. But yeah, look, I think anyone paying attention knows that was the thing that got them over the hump.
Yeah. I mean, Kingston, Starks definitely got noticed, and they were great talkers as well in NWA. And I feel like Starks was kind of like the breakout guy that no one really ever heard of before. Kingston, you may have if you were a real hardcore fan, seen on the independent team, but Starks for sure. And you kind of christened him early on. You said, this guy's got a bright future. You saw it right away.
Yeah, look, I'm glad that it worked out. I'm glad I was right, because hopefully it means that the next time I see someone and I feel that way about them, then, you know, chances are people will be more inclined to listen to me.
Yeah, maybe you could do some scouting, you know. I don't want
to strain myself, pat myself on the back here, but I've always prided myself on having a pretty good eye for talent. I mean, somebody sent me a card that I booked in England from about 5 or 6 years ago, and it's like a who's who of like NXT UK and AEW and New Japan and stuff now. So it's like, okay, good. I'm glad I was right. Like, and the same thing with Starks. So I was very, very confident, and I expressed that to Billy and said, you know, go with this guy. Like, and you know, other people saw that too.
Now, you're very polished in the ring, on the mic. How did you kind of get there, though? Like, who do you kind of credit helping you along? I know Samoa Joe in TNA was kind of a big influence for you. Obviously, GHC and Noah, tag team champion as well. Do you credit, like, Samoa Joe, or, like, who do you think helped you along the most in TNA?
Definitely, yeah. I think probably he'd be probably top of the list. Really, as much as anything, just giving me confidence. Like, you know, I think he could see that the understanding was there. But it was just a case of like teaching me a lot of little tricks to sort of to be able to utilize them. Like, I think the one thing Joe taught me the most is he taught me how to relax. Like, so I was very green going into TNA. So then it's like you're always playing catch up, you know, because you're always trying to get better, but at the same time you're also being given all this responsibility. So you kind of, you know, so it's this weird thing because you can't learn on TV. You know, I would learn on the house shows, and look, getting certainly being married to Beer Money and all those tag matches in my first year there was a huge help. Like Bobby Roode, you know, that's another guy I would credit with it. Doug, obviously, Doug Williams. But Joe was the first guy who really taught me, like, who really articulated a lot of it. Joe would be an excellent coach. You know, and I hope that maybe that's in his future, because I think he would really benefit a lot of the guys at the PC, because he articulates a lot of the unspoken techniques of the business, you know, rather than like, oh yeah, when you pick a guy up, do this. It's Joe has a way of articulating and teaching you a lot of the subtle, you know, nuances and the techniques to basically make it, you know, to make it easier, you know, because the thing for me is like the guys who are really good make it look easy. But that in itself is a skill, because the thing I cannot stand, like, I would rather see a match with, I would rather see a match that had a high spot that was, let's say, six moves that were executed so well and done in a way that was, that looked so organic and flawless and smooth and with fire and energy and passion, as opposed to 15 moves that were perfectly executed, but it was obvious that the two guys were cooperating the whole way through. They're like looking at each other, they're looking at each other's feet, and they're like tiptoeing around and like moving out and like moving and like, you know, putting themselves in position to get hit and all that shit. I hate that shit more than anything. Mm-hmm. Because it's not a high spot then. It's a routine. Right?
Yep.
And I just see so much of that now, and I go, like, that should be unacceptable. Like, that should be unacceptable. Those guys should be crucified when they come back and say, what the fuck was that? It was totally, you totally exposed the business. It was totally fake and like, it had no believability to it whatsoever. But I don't care that you did, you know, I don't care that you did. It's not about flips, right? It's not about flips or super kicks or all that shit. No, that's not what I'm talking about. It's even selling, you know, I know that there's a huge debate all the time about, like, people don't sell enough or to sell the wrong things, whatever, right? But let's table that for a minute. Just the cooperation, like, obvious cooperation should be an instant, like, is my biggest no-no. You know, who gives a shit what you did if it was obvious to everyone that you were doing it together? Like, well, you know, then what are we doing here? You know, and like, I think when you look at the guys who sort of innovated a lot of the style of today that's now very prevalent today, you know, you're talking about a lot of the guys that were on top in TNA when I was there coming up. Like AJ and Joe and, you know, guys like that. And both of those guys taught me a huge amount, especially Joe. And a lot of it was based around little tricks of the trade to be able to sort of either do or be on the receiving end of those kind of big moves or high spots, but in a way that was like natural and organic and real and emotional, not just standing around waiting for someone to land on you, you know, like, and you know, that's why they're where they are. And the people that have done poor interpretations of their stuff are where they are.
I feel like too choreographed nowadays. It's just, it just doesn't look right. It doesn't look like wrestling the way it should be.
It used to be. I'm in my early 30s, but even I sort of remember a time where I would be quite offended if I was talking to someone and they said, oh, that wrestling's choreographed. You know, like, I would be like, well, that's not fair. You know, like, I would cringe when I heard people say it was choreographed. You know, but there's a lot of stuff now where it's like indefensible. You cut, like, there's no other word for it. It's like, well, yeah, that's, okay, that's 100. Yeah, that's choreographed. You're right. You know what I mean? There's no other way around it, because it's like there's no other way that exchange would be able to happen without obvious cooperation.
I was watching the Royal Rumble and then AEW's Battle Royal. It was just like spot, 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 spot. So obviously choreographed. The guys waiting. Then you go back and you watch this, the 92 Rumble with Flair or something. It looks like those guys are actually trying to win the match, not work on a spot. I mean, it's just so much difference between then and now. It's kind of scary.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I think of myself as like someone sort of trying to bridge the gap. I don't know, but I'm like, I, because here's the thing: the ironic thing, I really like working with the guys who can do those incredible high spots and incredible moves. I really like telling that story and working with those guys, because that contrast is an interesting story for me to tell. Yeah. You know, and I think that maybe a lot of the problem comes in the fact that we've developed this sort of thing in the last few years of this, what I call dream match booking, which is like, oh, if we take a guy who's like a really good luchador, oh, a dream match would be to book him with another really good luchador. Is it? Like, because that's the same, they do the same shit. Like, and to me, that's where you get the stuff that's like too choreographed. And I'm not singling out luchadors. But I'm saying, you know, I would do a lot, like, I take third party bookings, you know, for title matches, and the NWA, you know, decides which ones to take and, you know, whatnot. But they'll propose opponents, you know, because obviously we have to approve the opponent. And a lot of the time they'll say, yeah, you know, this guy's about the same size as you and this. And I'll be like, well, if that's the only criteria, then pick someone else. Right? Like, pick the best performer. Right? Because I don't need a guy who looks just like me.
Right.
Like, what's interesting about that? Like, the interesting thing is, like, oh, can this guy, like, especially for me, when I'm going literally around the world defending the title, the intrigue is, okay, can this guy, who may be bigger than me on this occasion, or maybe smaller but faster, or this guy might be more technical, or this guy may be a better high flyer, or, you know, whatever, this guy might be a better brawler, can this guy unlock the, you know, does this guy, can this guy find the, you know, the way to get through? Is this the guy that's going to pull the sword out of the stone tonight? Because as the champion, you want to kind of present yourself as a guy that can do a little bit of everything, you know, who can be. And that's why I think certain guys are well equipped to have sort of long title reigns like mine, because it's like I can stand against anyone who excels in a certain field, and they can go, he might have him beat on that area and that area, but I don't know about this area and this area, you know? So it's like, can this guy on this night be the guy that pulls a sword out of the stone? Now, I'm sorry, if you're going to put me against a guy who the main criteria is like he's a similar size and weight, then everyone's just going to go, well, he's just like a crappier version of him, so he ain't going to win.
Right.
Right. And so, like, you have to be now, I'm not suggesting that the perfect matchups thing isn't a great piece of business. It's just used judiciously. Like, the idea that at some point you'll see me and Eli Drake finally. But, right, you know, because when the time is right. So it's like, finally he's going to get a chance. Now we're going to see. Right, you know, now we're going to see who's the better guy, right? Who's going to get the W on this night? Not just like all the time, because it's like that's a thing to be built for a special attraction, you know. And it's like I don't know. I feel like it's all reflective of our culture in general, which is I want everything right now. You know, give it to me, you know, don't make me wait, like give it to me for free on social media, you know, everything, you know, like, please, you know, I want instant gratification right now, you know. And I think that's reflected in wrestling too, is it's just like, you know, next week on the show, it's going to be this guy versus this guy. Okay, what's on the pay-per-view in 4 weeks then? Like, oh, well, don't worry about that. We've got three more TVs to get through before that. Like, all right, cool. Again, we just, when we look at our show, we have the luxury, which, you know, it's the way I like to look at things, positive, you know, glass half full. It's like, yeah, okay, we don't have a huge rights fee for a weekly television show. You know, that would be nice. But on the flip side of that, we're not under this immense pressure to promise stuff every single week to try to get people to watch. We can go, okay, you're going to watch the show for the concept. Like the show's going to get you, going to hook you in with the compelling characters and the storylines and the way these things develop and these personalities. The thing we really want you to see is the pay-per-view. When these two go, you know, when this guy finally gets his hands on this guy, you know, when these women finally, you know, go at it for the title, you know, when this tag team finally gets a shot at the tag titles, you know, and this manager's not going to be involved, whatever it is. Like, that's the point. You know, that's the, and we, so I look at it, we have the luxury of that. because we don't have, because, you know, but on the flip side of it, it's also a case of necessity breeds invention, because we don't make any money unless people buy the pay-per-views, or at least we didn't, you know, things right. might change, but it's like, when we were looking at the show before, it's like, if people don't buy this pay-per-view, we don't eat. So what's going to get people to buy a pay-per-view, you know? And that was that. It's amazing what happens when you have to make money.
Yep. Very, very true. And I like that slow build or long build. Obviously nowadays is a little bit different, but I like build up and I like the long build, and I like the NWA champion having to adapt to different guys like Flip Gordon or Trevor Murdoch or James Storm. I liked it. You got to wrestle different guys, not all the same guy generically right. lined up.
That to me is like how you stay fresh. Like, I'm sure there are some people with a short attention span that, you know, are probably like, oh my God, is he still the champion? But the thing is with it is it's like you get over this hump. And then it's like, now it's got to a point where now people go, it's been so long, who's going to actually do it? And you kind of, and it almost re-energizes the whole thing.
Like, yeah.
Someone will do it eventually.
Maybe.
But when?
Yes. And it's been 840 plus days as champion. You're in elite company right now with a lot of the names that are ahead of you. You know, the Fezzes of the world, the Flyers of the world, the Dory Funk Juniors of the world, Kaniski. I mean, you got some pretty big names ahead of you. Any pressure yeah. when you see that and you realize those names?
No, a great deal of pride, you know, but at this point, you know, having been endorsed by Harley and by Dory, you know, being asked to present the Luthez Award to Dory, you know, and things like that. I don't feel as, I used to be a bit more shy about, when I would hear these comparisons and I would be a little shy about it. Not so much that I didn't believe it in my heart, because I have to believe it. You have to. Right. You understand what I'm saying? You have to believe that you can, that you belong in that company. Otherwise there's no point. But there's a difference between believing it and projecting it yourself. Right. Like, it's not something that you want to talk about yourself. Hey, you know, Nick Aldis on NWA Power might say that. Right. But the Nick Aldis talking to you right now is not going to go, oh yeah, like, I'm just as good as those guys. You know, so it feels good when other people make that comparison, but I was always very cautious not to endorse that opinion myself, you know, to stay neutral in it. But when Harley Race, you know, endorsed me, and then, you know, and then Dory, it's like, you know, that's why I take exception if someone else has shit to say, because it's like, all right, well, Harley Race thinks differently, so
right.
I'll go with that, you know?
Yeah, there's a little bit of a respect factor when, you know, one of the greatest of all time. The greatest, thank God, green earth.
I mean, to me, when you talk about respect in the industry, Harley Race is like the first, is top of the list, so.
I love him. I got a shirt on right now, actually.
I see that. I see that. Yeah. I have that shirt, too.
Nice. Good stuff. Good stuff from Harley. As far as finding you and getting you into the business, was Harley like the main trainer for you, or was WLW? No. He wasn't? Okay.
No. Actually, by the time I went to go to Harley's camp, I was already a full-time wrestler.
Oh, okay.
I was wrestling full-time for Brian Dixon. Yeah, in England. I had started with the Knight family, Paige's family. And, over there at that time, if you wanted to wrestle, as you know, if you wanted to be a full-time wrestler, you had to work for Brian Dixon. And Brian liked guys with a certain look, you know, like my, he liked, you know, because he brought a lot of Americans over. He would bring over Gangrel. I wrestled Gangrel and PCO, you know, Rene Dupree, Daniel Bryan. You know, I got to work with all these, you know, phenomenal talents, you know, and I was like 17, 18, you know, as a kid. But that's like working out and having a good size got me in the door, got me those opportunities, because breaking in with Paddy and Julia, you know, they had a good amount of shows, but they were always going to take care of themselves first. And that's, they should have, you know, that was it. Cause obviously they were all working full time in the business too. So there was some opportunities, but not full time. And, Doug Williams had vouched for me, and got me booked a few places. And again, you know, I was starting to build some momentum for myself independently, but everywhere I went, you know, the veterans would all say, you need to go work for Dixon. You need to go work for Brian Dixon. Brian would love you. You should go work for Brian. And eventually I did. And I was full time for Brian. But for me, going to Harley's camp was like a professional development decision. You know, I went, okay, I know there's things I need to work on. You know, and I need to hear it from, I need to, like, oh, I wanted to come to America, you know, and I need, so I knew that there's different techniques and styles, you know, and there's, and, you know, the Brits, you know, we're certainly the way I came up, you know, most of the Brits, you know, they can all, they know how to technical wrestle. They know, you know, how to exchange holds, and they know catch wrestling. But maybe some of the high spots and, you know, some of the more kind of entertaining elements, maybe not so much. And I knew I needed to improve on those. I saw Harley had a camp, and I was just like, that's the one. That's, you know, Harley Race is like, he'd already been someone who I had studied a lot and, you know, wanted to be like. And to be fair, you know, to be totally honest, I would hear a lot of I saw a lot of the comparisons that they would make to Triple H, and he was someone who I had always tried to emulate to a certain extent as well, because I saw myself as someone who could do that kind of the things the way he did. So then I thought, okay, the Harley, I should go train with Harley. And so that's how that came. That's how that came to be, because I just saw it as a best place for me to go to potentially not just to train and learn from Harley, but to, you know, get in front of people who could tell me, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that. And to be around people who I thought, okay, these guys are giving me a kick up the ass. Like, if I'm around some people who are better than me, because I've always been like that in sports. You know, I competed at pretty high level in a few different sports when I was a kid, and I always played better when I was around people who were better than me. I was skipped a grade in high school, so I was always playing with kids older than me in everything. So I was always sort of, and I'm the youngest of five siblings, so I've always had that thing of like, if I'm around people who are better than me, I'm like, it forces, you know, it pushes me to keep getting better, to, you know, to catch up. Rather, I don't like getting comfortable.
That's good. I mean, it's like the ultimate, like, finishing school. You got all these guys around you that can help you.
Yeah.
They basically can mold you, and you become just as good as they are, basically. I mean, it's a great kind of way to go about life and really learn.
Yeah, yeah. And there were a lot of guys there, like Joe Hennig was there when I went, and Sam Shaw, who's now Dexter Loomis, like, he's, you know, one of my best friends. So it's like, I made some great friends there, but it was like, I remember, you know, seeing those guys and other, and it was like, they would sit and go, wow, like, you're really good at catch wrestling, you know? And then I would see him like, man, you're such a good drop kick. Or like, God, how do you do it? Like, how do you get so high on that hip toss? You know, like, we would all be sort of, you know, we weren't all standing around going like, no, fuck him. You know, like, we were all sort of looking at each other and go like, how do you do that? You know, show me how to do that. Like, God, well, I need to be able to do it like that. You know, like, help me get better. You know, like, we were all sort of pushing each other. And the guys who had that attitude at that camp were the ones who went on to do something.
That's great. That's a great attitude to have. Does Jeff Jarrett see you from there? Like, how did you get over to TNA? Like, who recruited you in there?
No, I got recruited to TNA because of Gladiators. I got
Brutus Magnus. That's right. Yes, yes.
I did the TV show. I came back from Harley's camp, and I went back to working full time for Brian. And an audition came up for something else, and I got it. And off the back of that, the guy who was the director of that also had an agency, and he then was like, hey, they're bringing back Gladiators, you should go in for that. And I did, and got it. And, you know, my life totally changed. I mean, that was a huge, huge break. There's a big TV show. I was on buses and billboards, and, you know, tube stations and on all sorts of commercials, doing every bit of media I could do. Like, I mean, I did well on that show because I knew from wrestling, I had a better work ethic than everyone else on that show. I'm not ashamed to say it. Like, most of those guys on that show with me, some of them had a little bit of entertainment background, but most of them just came from athletics and stuff, and they didn't really get it. They were just, all they wanted to do was like do the games, and you know, they didn't, the rest of it, they were just sort of like, they liked being celebrities, but they just sort of assumed that it would just happen. Where, so when these media, I would do everything, like, and they would all go and do this media and be like very kind of ho-hum, like, oh yeah, no, it's great. And I would, you know, and I would go do these media stuff and be totally on. You know, I'd be like, I'm going to go in there and smash everyone. And I'm going to, you know, because I knew that's what they wanted. And so then I became, it was like all the media requests would come for me. You know, it would be like, and then, and for me, it was more exposure. I was like, okay, I want to be the face of this thing. And, you know, for those two seasons I was. And so one of the, and then one of the things that happened was I got the big, there was a big magazine feature done on me. And, that issue of the magazine was the first time that a TNA guy had been on the cover instead of a WWE guy, and that was AJ. So the TNA office paid a lot of attention to it, and they found me, and you know, and that's how it all came to happen.
I feel like the TNA run obviously was a big part of your career and a big part of your growth. What do you kind of think of like what happened there and kind of like the way things went there? You think that TNA should have been bigger kind of than what they were? Do you feel maybe Dixie was holding them back? What do you, what was your, I know it's a kind of big question, but what were your thoughts?
No, and I honestly, I kind of resent that narrative that gets put out about Dixie, because Dixie, again, say what you will about, but she put her money where her mouth is. You know, like she was the one who invested in, you know, and encouraged, you know, her family to invest and like pushed a lot of things. Yeah, like did she get everything right? No, of course not. But it's just, it's, you know, there comes a point where you start to get, I start to get a little tired of seeing all these people who are purportedly experts at wrestling, right? Who are, oh, I'm a great booker. I'm a great producer, executive producer. You know, I know how to make a TV show successful, yada, yada. They were all happy to come and take Dixie's money. But then when the company didn't work, they said, oh, Dixie doesn't know what she's doing. Well, she paid you because you said you knew what you were doing.
Right.
So who's lying here? You know what I mean? It was like they were all happy to take Dixie's money to run the company, but then when they couldn't make, but then when they couldn't get, they couldn't actually do it because they didn't have the same support system that they had before when they were doing one job for Vince McMahon or for whoever else. You know, suddenly it was like, oh, Dixie doesn't know what she's doing. Oh, it's Dixie, you know, and it's like, because all I remember is a bunch of guys coming in one after the other who all, basically, the one thing they all wanted was complete autonomy and complete control. So they said, let me run everything, Dixie. Don't, you know, let me be in complete control. And then when it didn't work, they said it was all Dixie's fault. It was like, you had complete autonomy. You know, and so there's a lot of things. Like, ultimately, when you're the boss and you're the money, by default, it's your fault. You know what I mean? By default, it all falls on you. The buck stops with you. Billy would say that about the NWA today. No matter what happens, even if something happened and it was like, well, that was Nick's idea, you know, ultimately, it was still his decision to go with my idea, right? And so, yes, in that respect, yes, you know, you obviously, the lion's share of responsibility falls with Dixie, because she put her trust in a number of different people, you know, some good, some bad. But there are people love to try to condense what went wrong with TNA into like one thing. And it's never one thing. It's always a series of different things, you know, a series of different scenarios and situations and, you know, personalities. She put her trust in some people who took advantage of her. You know, they overspent. They tried to run before they could walk. They moved away from what brought them to the dance and started trying to be more, instead of trying to be TNA, they tried to be more like WWE, and we don't need two of them. We need an alternative. You know, I'm not going to say anything that hasn't been said before, but ultimately, you know, it gave me everything. It gave me a nice living, you know, great friends, you know, I met my wife there, and gave me a great deal of experience, you know, good and bad, because obviously, look, you have to experience some bad things too. It all goes into your, you know, into life's rich tapestry, you know, and my professional tapestry is a combination of some, you know, great momentum and success, and then seeing some other, you know, massive mistakes and going, oof, you know, learning from them and being there to observe it and seeing all the different, you know, seeing that, you know, being around different people. I mean, God, think about the people that I've been able to work with. It's like a who's who of the wrestling business over the last 20, 30 years.
Sting, Kurt Angle, Eric Young, a bunch of guys, a bunch of good guys.
Well, yeah, Kevin Nash, but also like, but not just, but it'd be behind the scenes, you know, Keith Mitchell, Mike Weber, Eric Bischoff, Bruce Pritchard, like, you know, Vince Russo, Jeff Jarrett, like Hogan. I mean, like, you know, and then like Jim Cornette. Cornette was an agent there when I first started. He was like, literally, at some point or other, like, so, you know, virtually all of the real, with the exception of Vince McMahon and, you know, anyone who's WWE life for life, I've had the opportunity at some point or other to work with like a who's who of the wrestling industry, you know, over the last sort of, you know, 10 years.
This is going to be a very generic question. I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but you seem like a WWE guy just based on size, look, charisma, your just ability. You seem like you'd be a Vince McMahon guy, slam dunk. Any sort of, I know there, I guess some imaginary heat there, but with Bruce, I guess. I know that's sometimes that gets brought up randomly, I hear. But is there, I don't know, it just seems to me, maybe you don't want to go there, or maybe it's something that is, timing isn't right. But to me, it's like, I guess, a generic question. But it always seems like, man, he seems like a WWE guy, just Vince's prototypical size guy.
Well, I don't know. Could be any number of things. But at this point in time, I wouldn't want to, no. I turned down other opportunities because I was primarily focused on trying to make this successful, because I'm at a point in my life where, I'm now thinking about long-term investments as well as just sort of short-term gratification of look at me, and I'm on WrestleMania or whatever. It's like, I'm sort of going, okay, are you going to throw away all the work you've done elsewhere to just, you know, just for the chance of like, you know, a maybe of this, and is that what you want? And, you know, what I want right now is to really work hard to build on this foundation that I've built with this organization and leave a legacy with it.
I always think of like the Sting comparison, like how he kind of never wanted to go there because he thinks that they wouldn't do something right with him, and he kind of ended up being right.
I'm not saying I don't want that to be the takeaway from this. Like, oh, right, Nicola says that WWE wouldn't know what to do with him, and no, because that's what will happen. Who knows? Who gives a shit? Do you know what I mean? Like,
gotcha.
Ultimately, like, if they know where I am. Like, and who's to say that I'd need to sign a contract with them? I could go do something with them tomorrow. You know, like we could do it. They could bring back Starrcade, and we could do an NWA title match with, you know, me and Randy Orton, Starrcade. You know what I mean? It's like, anything's possible, right? It's all doable. So it's like, I just try not to live in those sort of parameters, you know, set by sort of, I think the wrestlers put a lot of limitations on themselves based on, oh, it's all I've ever wanted to do is work for someone else. Like, yeah. Well, you know, really? Like, Like, your own what I wanted to do is like be a big time pro wrestler and make a name for myself and make money and have some incredible moments. Like,
yep. I feel like also sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side. You kind of want to rather be your own boss than be somebody else's, work for somebody else. That could be a lot of the case with a lot of people too.
I always say this. Did Hulk Hogan growing up wanting to headline WrestleMania and wanting to work with Vince McMahon? No, because it didn't exist. He created a situation where they made WrestleMania based, what I mean? Like, Hogan just wanted to be a big time deal.
And sometimes, obviously, other things can and grow, and you're doing so many other things now too. You got your book, you got your supplements, you got Fight TV, you got the NWA, you got a lot of stuff on your plate.
Yeah, look, I've always tried to be multifaceted, but it's like, what I'm saying is, no one ever really knows what's coming next. But you have to put yourself in a position to, if you want to make history, you have to put yourself in a position to be able to change history. You know what I mean? To do something new.
Now, as we wind it down, we hit the end button, I guess you could, so to speak, head towards the finish. Do you have any dream matches, any guys out there like that we hadn't talked about, hadn't mentioned yet, that you didn't work, that you got your eye on?
Well, I just mentioned one as a passing thing. I think, I feel like I would love to wrestle Randy Orton, Edge. I think that the more I look at it, it's funny, the more I see, the more I just, every now and then my mind will run away with me. And I think this story that I could tell with Roman Reigns, the contrast, and the build we could do with that. Like, I think he's phenomenal. I think in terms of sort of big, big fight feel, big money moment sort of thing. But but other than that, there are some, I'll tell you what, I would have loved, I'm very blessed that I got to wrestle Sting. I just wish that I had been a little more experienced when I got to do it. Like, I was still just a little green, and I think back to it now and think, oh God, what I wouldn't be able to do with it. Like, just if it had just been a few years later, like what I had been able to do with that. Like, I feel like, but look, that's mental masturbation. It's just like, what ifs. I can't spend too much time thinking about it.
Yep. Where do you see yourself in a couple of years? Let's say down the road, like, what do you see yourself doing? Where do you see the NWA being bigger than ever? Like, kind of, what do you see for yourself?
100%. Yeah. Significant growth for the NWA and me being an integral part of it. Then on other levels, my other business ventures, continuing to grow and prosper. That's really what I'm looking at now.
Now, please tell us about everything, like your other business ventures, your supplements, your book, everything you got going on.
Well, yeah, the book's been out for a while. I'm actually working on a second book. I'm actually working on an ebook now called Straight Up, which is going to come out probably in the next 2 or 3 months. But legacysups.com. We've had some really great, had our best week of sales ever last week. If you go to legacysups.com, you can see our line of products, which is a pre-workout, some test boosters, a fat burner, and sleep aid, which is actually our bestseller, Recovery PM, which people have been just loving. It's a super effective natural sleep aid, which has been helping a lot of people during the pandemic with sort of upset sleep patterns and too much screen time and a lot of uncertainty and a lot of anxiety and a lot of unrest. If your sleep isn't right, your health is in big trouble, and this sleep aid will get you right. And it's Recovery PM. So we've had some incredible feedback from that. So legacysups.com. You can use code OLDIS for 10% off too.
And NWA, should we be looking forward to some more Shockwave? Should we be looking for some more Power, Primetime Live? What should we expect?
I think you can expect to get word on NWA Power, which should be, you know, which should be soon. So if you're not following the NWA, go, you know, it's on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all at NWA. And if you haven't checked out any of our stuff yet, you can go to youtube.com/NWA and you can get up to speed with everything we've done. All 21 episodes of NWA Power that have come before in the last three seasons. And yeah, Shockwave, 10 pounds of gold. Even some full pay-per-view, a full NWA 70 pay-per-view is up for free on YouTube, which is Cody and I in a rematch, 2 out of 3 falls for the title for Nashville. Sure. Yeah. And so, yeah, well, there's, you know, plenty to familiarize yourself with us before we get ready to kick it back in 2021.
Nice. And what's all your social media and all your plugs for you?
Twitter at Real Nick Aldis, Instagram at Nick Aldis. I'm verified on both. So look for the blue check. And I have varying days of activity. So certain days I'm very active and then other days I barely look at it, but I do try to keep up with it. I've got an action figure out. You can go to cellatoys.net. You can get a retro style action figure of me. And then I'll be part of the Retromania game, which is launching, I guess, in like a couple of weeks. So we're talking about setting up a Twitch where I'll play as myself, you know, and play people for Retromania on Twitch.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, great idea.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye out for that on my socials too.
Yeah, it's cool. Hasbro looking figure too from Cella.
It's done phenomenally well, and it's really cool. I've been very, very pleased with how it's went.
You got some big stuff. Hopefully we see more from Strictly Business, and hopefully we see more from Aldis Enterprises for sure. Yes, so, Nick, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
All right. No worries. Thanks, John.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.